going to try a little something different today. Let's see if I can do this show without wearing any pants.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Apparently not. Hey, welcome to the program. How are you today? Like I care. Whatever. Whatever. Seriously. Come on. You know what the nastiest invention is ever? By far the nastiest invention ever is the mirror. Why did they do this? What a horrible, horrible experience the mirror is. Have you looked in it lately? It's not good. It's a direct reflection of what you look like. Who needs that? What person in their right mind looks in a mirror and says, "Wow, that looks good"? Nobody does. Except Trump, I guess. And you know, that's not true. I heard about this invention, the skinny mirror. Have you heard about that? Apparently, it's kind of warped a little bit so that it makes you look skinny no matter how big you are. And people love looking at themselves in the mirror. Now, that's an intelligent invention. Looking at something that isn't real, that's pretty much politics. Why do you think so many people go to Disney World and Disneyland all the time and strip clubs and all that? Why do you think people go to those places? It's because they're fantasy lands. They're not real. We're escaping the realistic world. That's what we want to do. We're on this planet to escape it. Interesting. Let's get rid of the mirrors. What do you want to do this summer? I want to go on vacation. I want to get away. Oh, that doesn't sound good. But you don't like your life as it is? No, I got to get away for a couple of weeks. I can't stand anymore. I just got to get away and refresh. Oh, okay. That doesn't say much for the normal stuff, your everyday life. It sounds like you don't like it and it's horrible. Yeah, it is. I want to go to Disney World and stand in a castle. How are you? How are you? I'm going to make believe I care. I kind of really do. Because if you get sick or something and you can't listen to this show anymore, where does that leave me? So please stay healthy. Take your vitamins. I stopped taking vitamins about 3 years ago. Look at what happened. It didn't work out too well. I had read so many articles that said that taking vitamins is like stupid because the amount of vitamins you get in a multivitamin pill is like really so inconsequential. It's not funny. They said you've got to eat the proper foods to get your vitamins. That's the best way to take them in, not small little doses in pill form. So I believed that and I stopped taking vitamins and I started eating proper foods for 6 minutes. And then I realized this food thing isn't going to work out. By then, I was off the vitamins, and nothing seems to work out anymore. I bought an exercise bike. I saw it on one of those television shopping club things. It was like $130 for this exercise bicycle. And I thought, well, that's good. Bicycling is something that is pretty good. Unfortunately, you don't go anywhere. It's called a stationary bicycle, and that doesn't mean you write letters on it. It means that you sit on the damn thing. You don't go anywhere, but you make believe you do. Another fictional piece of equipment. It's $130, I figured, and they had a pay system where you only had to do like four installments of $30, and I figured, well, that's like a cocktail or two for me, which is inconsequential as well. So I did it, and my clothes stay really wrinkle-free when they hang on the handlebars of the exercise bicycle. I recommend it for your clothing. Exercise-wise, not really. See, I invest in all these things that don't work out because I don't work out. I think I've told you so many times. I go to that purple place, that Planet Fitness or Fitwell or whatever it's called. Apparently, you can join for a penny. I thought, well, that's okay. I've got that. Got a whole bucket of those things. So I joined for a penny, and Then you have to go, like, then it's $10 a month, and that didn't work out for me either. The only thing I got out of Planet Fitness was a t-shirt and a couple of pens that I stole. I think the pens were complimentary, I'm not sure. So, I don't know, and nothing's working out as far as that goes either. I don't eat properly. I mean, I eat with my mouth. I chew my food and swallow it, but I don't think I even do that right. The dietitians on this show have told me that if you eat too fast, you get gas, you get indigestion, and you get fat. You've got to eat very, very slowly like the Europeans do. They sit down and have dinner. It takes them 2 hours. They eat very slowly. They just sit down and they have conversations with people, and they don't get real fat, yet they're eating pasta and all this kind of crap, and I don't have the time to eat for 2 hours. I'm hungry. It doesn't make any sense to me. I stopped taking fish oil pills because I had read a report in the New England Journal of Medicine about 2 months ago that that doesn't make any difference. Fish oil doesn't work. It's ridiculous. That, again, the dosage of fish oil it would take to actually have any impact on your body is far more than what they put in any of those fish pills. And I didn't think fish oil worked anyway because I had fish when I was a kid. I had goldfish. I put them in a bowl. They died within 6 hours. And yet they're full of fish oil. They are fish. So that didn't work for them. So why is it going to work for me? So I stopped taking fish oil. And now my joints are creaking a little bit. I just don't know what to do anymore. I know more than anybody. I know more than Donald Trump. Because I've been doing this radio thing for 30 years. Ron, you don't even seem like you're 30 years old. I know. I'm not. I've been doing this for actually over 30 years. Interviewing thousands and thousands of experts, thousands of doctors, and everybody that wrote books and authorities on everything. So I've heard it all. I've heard it all. And yet, is my life better? Not really. Doesn't matter. But that damn mirror thing bothers me. See, I don't only have an overactive bladder. I have an overactive mind. Yeah, I do. And I think there are pills for that too, but I'm not on this pill thing right now. I'm kind of off the pill thing. But I have an overactive mind. When I look at something, I don't just see it. I see through it, around it, with it. I mean, it's like a whole involvement. I second guess everything. I third guess. I fourth guess. I fifth guess. I sixth guess. I've got guesses more than I could possibly count. It's not easy having an overactive mind and accompanying bladder. Anyway, that's not your problem, is it? I don't know what your problem is, but I don't think that's your problem necessarily. All right, I do have a lot to say, and this is going to be kind of simple for you because all you have to do is just sit down and shut up, and I'll take it from here.
The Ron Van Dam Show is intended for mature audiences.
Oh, so that's what ironic means.
Yes, honey. Yes, it does.
I want to talk about the Electoral College. This is not Yale, where you spend a lot of money, buy a wing, give like a couple of $1,000s to the head of the athletic department. Not that kind of college. I'm talking about the Electoral College, this thing that was created a long time ago in order to make elections seem like they're fair no matter where you live in the country. So, unlike what you learned in school, where you take votes, everybody raise your hand, the most hands win. That kind of voting, which I call, and we all call, the popular vote. That simply means what you think it does: the most votes win. Seems simple, couldn't be any simpler than that. Yet we in this country fucked that up because we had to come up with this Electoral College. I don't know why the word college is in there. I have no idea. I guess you have to throw a word into stuff that doesn't make sense all the time. But it's the Electoral College. And what it means is if you live in a state like Montana, that if you voted for something, it wouldn't make any difference because nobody lives in that state, so you're always going to be outvoted no matter what you think. It doesn't matter because why even bother voting in Montana? There aren't that many people in it, so it's inconsequential in a popular vote, which would be votes from across the country. So they come up with this Electoral College. Now, it wasn't done for Montana, basically. It was done for the southern states. This was done at a time where there were slave owners. Remember that? And the slaves couldn't vote. Remember that? So there weren't that many people living in the South that could vote. And yet the slave owners had a lot of money, so they wanted their vote to count. So in that time, when the South and the Midwest were pretty sparse, they came up with this Electoral College thing. Let me tell you something, like everything else in our country, things change quite a bit over the decades. The South is pretty well populated now with some pretty diverse people, all of whom can vote. Atlanta is like the southern hub of everything. Nashville, Florida, Texas is full of people. So is the Midwest. There's like people all over the place now. So the reason that we put the Electoral College together no longer exists. I believe the Electoral College should be stopped and dropped. Let's get back to basics, the popular vote. I don't care where you live. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care about anything anymore. Let's go back to the most votes win. If you're living someplace like Montana and you want your vote to count, then move. I mean, seriously, let's stop this bullshit. Don't penalize the people in New York and Los Angeles and Chicago, etc. because that's what you're doing. That's what you're doing. You're making it more significant for lesser populated areas, which makes no sense. And also, there aren't many lesser populated areas left anymore. This country has shifted its balance of population considerably. Here's the biggest problem of all. The last three elections, starting in the year 2000, George W. Bush became president for two terms, he lost the popular vote, but won the Electoral College. He lost the popular vote, yet became president for 8 years. Then you had Barack Obama, won the popular vote, won the Electoral College, became president for 8 years. Then you had this schmuck of schmucks, I won't even say his name, who became president in 2016, lost the popular vote, but won the Electoral College. Two out of three of the last presidential elections, the president lost the popular vote. Two out of three of the last three presidents lost the popular vote, yet were president anyway. People who voted in the United States did not vote for that president, and they still were president. Come on, man. Two out of three in the last three. That's data that you gotta like listen to a little bit. Two out of three, man, didn't win the popular vote, and yet we're still president. All right, look, I don't have the power to stand up and say, let's cut out this crap. But somebody did. It was Elizabeth Warren, who no way, no how, no shape will be the next president. She's running for president. Ain't going to happen, Liz. However, she did make a big point of this yesterday at a speech at a gathering, telling the country that she believes that the Electoral College should be abolished, and this country should run by pure popular vote. The most votes wins. Well, I vote for that. And the reaction was incredibly favorable. Is it a coincidence that the last three presidents, the Democrat won by popular vote, the Republican George Bush, the Republican douchebag, Trump, those Republicans lost the popular vote, both of them, but yet still became president. So the Democrats have a lot to gain by abolishing the Electoral College. I get that. But let's just stop this foolishness and stop this rigging thing going on. The reason for the Electoral College no longer exists. There is no reason for it anymore. It would make a big difference. It would have made a big difference in 2016. By the way, I have perfect license to call President Douchebag Trump a douchebag because he calls people a douchebag from the White House. The exact term douchebag? No, but similar phrases are employed. This past weekend, President Douchebag tweeted about 50 times. Not one of those tweets was about the horrific terror attack in New Zealand. Because the perpetrator of the attack was white. Wasn't a foreigner in his definition. Okay, Trumpy, I mean, just every day you expose yourself more and more and more and more. I'm sorry I got a little political today, but I do believe the Electoral College should be dropped, and I do believe that there should be a push in this country to drop it because it is divisive. It is no longer needed, as I've stated so many times in the past 3 minutes. Do you agree with me? Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. But we need to discuss these things. We really do. And as much as Donald Douchebag Trump claims that he is not a racist, he is not a white nationalist, the magazines thereof consider Donald Trump in writing in their magazines to be their proponent, their hero. They stand behind him. He best represents them. And yet, in no tweets, in no comments, does Donald Trump denounce this attitude of white racist values. At no point does he dismiss himself from that label of which he is tagged by those factions. The worst he has ever said is, there are good and bad people on both sides. Don. And what's most frustrating to me is that Donald Douchebag Trump can say the most outlandish, ridiculous things through tweets, through his mouth. He can be involved in 2 million scandals. They can dig into his past and present and find ridiculous actions that make no sense, that are destructive to our democracy. The number of lies he tells and believes because somebody, he heard somebody say that somewhere, therefore it's fact now. All of this stands up against one comment, against one opponent or one other person. Don comes out clean, the person he's attacked come out destroyed. How does this happen? How does he get away with this bullshit? How? But he does. And until the day that America stands up and says, no, you've been an asshole all this time, and that's it. I don't care what your policies are. I've got some morals. I've got myself a voice. You cut this out now. You're under my employ, Don. I don't work for you. The government doesn't work for you. You work for the government. And the Congress sets the rules, and the Congress represents us. It's about time you represented all of us, Don, not just your base. Your job is to represent all of us and to bring us together, not to purposely divide us. And I'll leave you with this, the last comment that I remember from Don, that should the Republicans, or Donald more specifically, lose the next election, he can't necessarily be responsible for the reaction of his supporters. He also, he mentioned his supporters, bikers for Trump, and other normally, as he put it, violent factions that hopefully would never respond accordingly, but they could. That's a threat. That's a threat of violence. It's a threat of division. It's a threat of revolution against this country. And yet, as Americans, we sit back and we say, well, he's just crazy. Yeah, but he's the president. Okay, that's enough. Thank you very much. I'm getting off my soapbox. I guess there was a time in our history when they had soapboxes. It was the only way that someone could say something. Our guest is going to join us at this time, and I think you'll enjoy the guest. That's my thought. I'm not really sure that she will, but I think you will. Hey, do you like calamari? Octopus, squid, that kind of crap? I know a great restaurant, man.
Hey, this is Bobby Marone, former heavyweight contender. But I hung up my boxing gloves to open the area's new favorite restaurant.
Here we go. It's called...
It's Headshots. Jesus, give me a minute, would you?
Sorry.
Hey, do you love calamari? Then you need to come to Headshots this month for our Carnival of Calamari. That's right, we got tons of great recipes all made with delicious chicken.
Calamari.
You gotta try our famous 1-2 punch pasta loaded with shrimp.
Also says calamari.
Calamari. How about a nice beef lo mein piccata? And our spicy school bus fried yavlo? Forget about it. You've never had calamari until you've had the Eiffel Tower at Headshots during our carnival of I Could Have Knocked Joe Frazier on His Ass back in the day.
Oh my God.
Come in and ask for me, Bobby Calamari. Bobby Headshots. I'm the guy that owns the place.
Hi, Edward. How are you?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Edward Lee joins us. He's a chef. He's an expert in the culinary world, done some television, and has authored books before this, and he builds houses. You do everything. All right. This is interesting to me. The book is called Buttermilk Graffiti. And we do a lot of interviews on this show with chefs about recipes and how chicken is good for you or frozen vegetables. But rarely do I get the opportunity to speak about it in a psychological sense, how food has developed in our cuisine models through the years. This is kind of interesting to me. Where did the title Buttermilk Graffiti come from?
So it's kind of a poetic shorthand for two things. Buttermilk represents the southern part of me as I've grown up and lived in the South and love southern food, and graffiti's represents my childhood growing up in Brooklyn, New York, in a very immigrant a neighborhood that was heavy with immigrants, and I grew up eating lots of different foods and exposed to lots of different cultures very early on.
See, this is interesting to me because, I mean, I've traveled the country as well, and I was also brought up in New York, and I find that urban areas have a rich multitude of culture involved not only with their shopping and their experiences, but also certainly with their food. And then I've traveled to places in the South and other places in the Midwest where a hamburger and a hot dog is exciting. And a staple, and it's very interesting how there was that divide, and now I'm finding, as you have, you own restaurants in various places, that this this culture has actually seeped into areas where they didn't have it before.
No, and in some ways, I would argue it's actually flipping to the point where cities are becoming so expensive and the real estate's becoming so outrageous that. A lot of immigrant families are actually moving away. And cities that were once this sort of incredible places of diversity are becoming really less diverse. And you're seeing these small towns and small cities across America where, quite frankly, the living is easier, there's jobs available, there's cheap housing. And you're seeing them come out here, and through that, you're seeing the food change, and you're seeing these cuisines coming up. For all accounts, Louisville's a pretty small-sized city, and we've got everything from African food to Peruvian food, Vietnamese food, Lebanese food. It's fantastic. And you're seeing this crop up in places that traditionally we all thought were like, well, these are all white people, and it's a monoculture. Uh-huh. There's nothing here but hot dogs and hamburgers, and actually, there's not, and it's a really exciting time to eat outside of the cities.
Sure is. I mean, even if you go to a supermarket, used to be just the staple items, and there was one small section of international foods, they called it. And now it's aisles and aisles and seeping into what we thought were the normal aisles. I mean, it's fantastic, and those of us that love food are kind of in heaven now.
I remember a time not too long ago when no one knew what lemongrass was.
There you go.
And if you found lemongrass, it was like some weird thing and like ground up in a frozen jar or something. And now you can find fresh lemongrass almost everywhere you go.
Yeah.
And that speaks a lot to where food is going. I always think of grocery stores as kind of this sort of a little window into our cuisine, because it's really where people shop. And if you look at the grocery stores and how they're changing, you really can see people are they're cooking a lot more at home than they used to, and B, they're cooking way more interesting things at home, and they're being influenced by all, you know, the television, the books, and the media, and the radio shows like yours. Yeah. Like there's a lot of this, and it's really changing the landscape of food permanently.
Is this country like behind? Because I've traveled to Europe as well, and there is so much of a melting pot now, certainly in Europe, and there has been in the past. It seems like in our country here, we're just starting to appreciate that.
You know, it's different. I always tell people, like, listen, for whatever it's worth, we're a young country. And I know there's a lot of discussions now, and we talk about race, and we talk about culture, and we're a really young country. Europe's had thousands of years to figure this out. Asia's had way more time.
Right.
So a lot of these things. But you think about where we were in food in the 60s, in the 70s.
Right.
You know, where we were with organic food just a generation ago.
Yes.
What's amazing about America is that although we're always a little bit behind, we make strides really quickly. We're a very accelerated culture, and we always have been. So things happen in a really fast pace here. Mm-hmm. You know, and the funny thing is, I always say, like, Americans are unique in this. You know, we grew up and we want to have a Jewish breakfast and a Mexican lunch and Italian dinner.
Yes.
You know, this is very much a luxury that you don't see in a lot of countries.
Really?
I remember a buddy of mine got married in Italy,
mm-hmm.
In a region where they make pesto.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were there for like 5 days. And for the first 2 days, it was amazing because, you know, all we did was eat incredible pasta.
Yeah.
And by the third night, I was like, does anyone know if there's a Chinese restaurant in town? They were like, well, what are you talking about? We eat pasta every single day of our lives. And in many of the international places, like I go to Korea, I'm Korean, you know, by birth.
Yeah.
I go to Korea all the time. Man, after a week, I get sick of eating rice and noodles. I'm like, I want a pot of curry. And what I find beautiful and what I talk about in this book is that, listen, you can go around and touch 100 different cultures and 100 different cuisines,
yeah.
and you never have to take out your passport. It's all right here in our backyards.
Yeah.
And if you live anywhere near even a small metropolis, I guarantee you there's great ethnic food right in your backyard.
Yeah.
And we should all go out there and explore a little more.
You also get into the book, like, why food is such a centerpiece for everything that we do on a daily basis. It's part of our being. Obviously, we all have to eat, but what that magnet is with food has to be tasty and wonderful. And it's amazing. I know. Just on another note, when I was growing up, I didn't know what spices were. My mother just put stuff in a pan, put it in the oven at 350, and when it was tough enough to eat, we ate it. We didn't. I mean, that was the way it was, and it really was. There were no spices, just salt. Anyway, this book, it's more than food. It's actually an examination of ourselves and our pleasures and our how we sustain. The book's available everywhere. Buttermilk Graffiti, I assume everywhere.
Yes.
Excellent. And how do we follow you and website in the website world?
In the website world, you can follow me on my website, www.chefedwardlee.com. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, all the social media things, Chef Edward Lee.
Cool.
I'm around, I'm about, I'm always talking, and I'm always on tour somewhere.
Fantastic. They only give me 10 minutes. I could probably talk to you for hours, but can't do it today. Buttermilk Graffiti, great book. Thank you so much for your time today, Edward.
Thank you for having me.
Take care. My time with you has come to an end for today, but fear not, I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. I hope by then we can get along. Until then, I wish you peace.